This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3086 for Monday, the 1st of June 2020. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for May 2020 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 54 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is: Dave and Ken talk about shows released and comments posted in May 2020.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon. You're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. This one is the community news for May 2020, and I'm joined, as always, by Dave.
Hello. You're also joined, hopefully not, but you might be joined by my neighbours who are all out in their various gardens making noises and stuff. So, but it'll just add to the ambience of the thing, you know, it'll be lovely. Until somebody starts a lawnmower, then I'll run and shut the door.
Ah, but it's no more May.
Well, if they're all out in the garden, they probably don't want to be cutting the grass, so they'll have to get out of the way to do it. So hopefully we're good.
So this is HPR. HPR is a community podcast network where the shows are contributed by members of the community. So our podcast listeners are the people who submit shows. Just one second, I need to shut a door, Dave. And this show is where we once a month give a roundup of what's been going on as far as we're aware in the HPR community, because we are but two. And this is where we introduce new hosts, Dave.
Well, I'm sorry to say there are no new hosts this month. There was one last month, but not this month.
I'm not angry, I'm just very disappointed. I must say, this COVID-19 thing is really messing up my podcast listening experience. It's doing a lot for me to be able to record podcasts, but as far as listening goes, that's more of an issue.
Yes, I know. I can't catch up with the backlog. I've got from 10 gigabytes down to 8.8 or something at the moment. Wow. It's really hard. Yeah, it's really hard to get any further.
So shall we go through the shows for last month? So the last one was on the Friday the 1st, and it was a case for unattributed messages, and it was by Ahuka, and also known as Kevin O'Brien. And there's a comment there from Brian. So the premise of the show was anonymity has an unfortunate consequence of enabling trolls and abuse. And Brian in Ohio says, enemies, it's sad that Ahuka considers his fellow citizens on the other side of the political spectrum his enemies. Also, all governments, not just Russia, sow political discord for their gain. Just listen to Voice of America and check out all the CIA ops in Central and South America. Quit picking on Russia as a straw man.
Nothing to say, really. I never heard any straw manning, but there you go.
Yeah, I suppose we're not as sensitive to American politics as I guess Americans would be.
Yeah, seems reasonable.
So the following day we had HPR Community News, and there were 6 comments on that show. That was the one where I abandoned you, Dave, left you all to yourself.
Yeah, well, I probably needed the practice.
Anyway. Tukatoroto says, thanks for keeping the flag of HPR high up and doing the community news episode all by yourself. Listening to the recap of the whole previous month's worth of episodes is one of those things that I look forward to when a new month starts. Tukatorato, you need to get out. Actually, you don't. You need to stay in until lockdown is over. But then you need to get out.
Get out in a safe manner, you would be all right. So I felt honor bound to answer these as I usually do. And I said, no problem. I appreciate the feedback to Tukatorato. His abbreviated name. I also feel community news is an important part of HPR and the show must go on, as they say.
And then we have a comment by Plaque. Blood type distributions. Dave mentioned in passing that O positive would be an unusual blood type. One might think so when you're just looking at how the alleles work.
Alleles.
Thank you, Dave. All you need is one A and one B
allele,
and then the O positive would be overruled. You might be tempted to believe that it's 25% of each of O, A, B, and AB, but that assumes an even distribution of genes. My blood type is A plus, and I grew up being taught it was one of the most common ones. When I moved to Hong Kong, I learned that the blood type distribution is not universal. Someone told me that my blood type was unusual. While A plus is not exactly unusual in China, and I assume Hong Kong, nearly 50% of the population is O positive, while A positive is at around 25%. It is also not as dominant in Sweden as I was led to believe. 37% of Swedes are A positive, while 32% are O positive, while in the UK and the US, O positive is somewhat more common than A positive, the reverse of the Swedish distribution. And he links to a Wikipedia article, Blood Type Distribution by Country. And then I'll do a hookah says, I love the show, you did a great job, Dave, though I'm guessing you would like to have Ken back next time.
And so I replied to Klacke, and I said, I think I was confusing, quotes, I have learnt this stuff with, I know about this stuff, I got a bit muddled. And now I think of it, I was learning about blood groups more than 50 years ago, and I should say just as an addendum, I've done very little else with it since then. So yeah, so it's times when you can rely on your memory and sometimes not. Anyway, back to the comment. It's an interesting subject, though, and I must go and refresh my dwindled knowledge about it all.
That's where I would jump in and suggest that somebody should do a show about it, save you the effort. You have plenty of stuff that I have on my list for you to do, Dave.
Yeah. I look at many things that I see in daily life. Just found a really interesting paleontology YouTube thingy. I was thinking, oh, we should really be highlighting paleontology. And I think, is it really my thing to do? more like to make a hash of it than anything else. Anyway, so replying to Ahuka, I say, thanks, Ahuka. I'm glad you enjoyed the show. In having run through it earlier, when Mumble refused to record anything for me, I obviously gave myself an accidental rehearsal. So maybe the show wasn't as disjointed as it could have been, smiley face. Yes, it's more fun when there are two of us to discuss and banter a bit, so I prefer the normal setup.
When I remember that it's on.
It happens.
This one I listened to while queuing for the recycling center. Getting my Python 3 code working in Python 2. And this was a Mr. X modifying some of his old code, trying to get it working on a new Raspberry Pi or something.
Yeah, the thing that he uses to listen to his podcast.
Ah, yes. I actually got this Meld tool from him, which is absolutely excellent.
Oh, I thought it had been mentioned before. I've been using it for years, and I'm sure it's somebody's recommendation. But yeah, it is a brilliant thing. It's my favorite.
So, should we move on? Any comments on that one?
No. It was a great show, and I do feel his pain. This Python 2.3 transition stuff is really, really horrible. But it's what happens. It's a thing that happens. It's happened in the Perl world as well.
I got into Python late in the game, so I started everything as Python 3. Just don't do any Python 2 at all.
Same here, same here.
Keeping track of downloads in Elm. Tukitoroto shows us how to keep track of data is being downloaded in Elm. This made perfect sense while I was listening to it.
Yes, same here, really.
I don't think we have anything else to say about the show.
Apart from if you came back and looked at this page afterwards, like now, you'd go, oh, goodness, what was that all about? But yes. No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't say it out loud, though, would you? No, you'd be too sensitive to say it.
No. Although I did have a smidgen of the Dave Morris effect over-engineering something here that you're downloading. But I suspect with Tukitoroto, it's part of a larger project that we will see at some point.
I assumed this was part of his space game thing that he's building, but I don't know whether he actually said as much, but yeah.
So then we had the Linux In-Laws, Season 1, Episode 5, Porn and Skynet. This is the one where they did the NVIDIA thing at the end. And Bendy says, Skynet, why? Wow, I didn't realize Skynet was really NVIDIA. I'm going to bid my graphics cards right now. Thank you so much for the heads up.
Yes, they're having fun with that stuff.
They are indeed. The following day, it was CRVS with some Vim hints. And I thought to myself, that's got to be right up your alley there, Dave.
Yeah, we had a little conversation about this. I think there were a few issues with the way he'd put together his notes and stuff. Not that anything insurmountable. But he's quite a Vim enthusiast. So yeah, this is pretty good. I'm not seeing a mistake here when it says Vim info plus equals N dollar. Just send him an email asking. Anyway, yeah. My only thing about this is it's very clever and I'm quite impressed. But I don't know why you'd want to do it or why I'd want to do it. Maybe I'm just stuck in the mud and don't see the need to have things in the xdg.config directory. I mean, it's nice that things have developed to place themselves there. That's great. But you know, things like Vim and VI, and there's loads of other things. There's a lot of other things that don't follow that line, and forcing them to do so is quite a job. But you know, if that's the way you feel it should be, then fine.
Well, it makes the other desktops work. Makes it compatible.
So it certainly actually helps with managing doc files is a thing. Then it certainly helps with that, isn't it?
Yeah, would be nice to have somebody give us an introduction and then an in-depth look at like the free desktop and XGG and some of the applications. I use XGG open all the time to open files, and it would be great to know where the configuration files for saying, okay, I want to open this with this application come from, the MIME types and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm sure I could find out, but it would be just easier if somebody told me.
Yes. It's always good to have somebody who knows their way around this stuff give an overview or an explanation. I always find it's much better. It's more fun, more interesting than just digging around in dry documentation, which I'm not all that good at, to be honest.
So the next one arose from a issue I had, which was working on a show, the Finding Raspberry Pis on the Network 3052, about putting quotes inside a bash string. And I thought, hey, I've got a bash expert here online. What's going to come of this? 4 hours later.
So,
four hours, 4 days later.
It was just a thing. Occasionally I think, oh, I am not as clear about this as I should be. So therefore, it's likely that a lot of people are similarly unclear. So why not just make myself clear and on the way share the clarity. So that's what I did. And Bash is a little bit odd the way it handles quotes. I mean, partly because it's a rag bag of bits that have gradually accumulated, I think, but not to mean that that's a bad thing necessarily. But
no, it just happens.
Has a sort of bought at the scrapyard type of accumulator. Anyway, so comments.
Nobody, who a long time commenter, but are they a host, Dave? Let me just check that. No, Dave, they are not. That's amazing, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yes. Made some very helpful contributions over the past few months. It's surprising.
Very, very shocking, in fact. Shocking. Shocking, I tell you. Anyway, nobody says, further simplifying, there are actually more than two types of quoting in Bash. In addition to the single and double, there are also ANCC and localized quotations. And by the way, this is not going to be an easy comment to read. For this problem, I would have used the ANCC quotation, alias show network, dollar, single quote, Nmap, you're going to have to read that. Personally, I find it a bit more readable. It might not be as portable, but that shouldn't matter as the episode specifically addresses Bash. There are explanations of ANCC quotations in the Bash manual. So what is that there? You put in dollar, then the quotes?
Yes, there's a thing in Bash where dollar and then a quoted string allows you to add all sorts of backslashy things inside it. So you can put Unicode sequences in there if you want to, and backslash N and backslash T.
Wow.
And all that sort of stuff. It's great. It's really good. But let me go on to my comment. I said, thanks.
Please do.
You're of course perfectly right. I tend not to think of this way of doing things, maybe because I originally learned Unix on HPUX and Sunos and Ultrix actually a long time ago. I might be accused of being a little stuck in my ways. I did think of mentioning this in the show, but didn't do it because it was a snippet. I didn't want to go into too much detail and make the episode too long. I did link to the relevant page in the documentation. There's a link in the comments here, however. Feel free to add the Bash scripting series yourself. I look forward to hearing a different view from you in due course. Little boy next door.
Yes.
Got a good pair of lungs on him.
Good. It's also nice to hear kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's amazing now, you know, kids are playing a lot more in the street. And here, since the lockdown, kids are playing more in the street, but the number of accidents and deaths hasn't decreased because they've moved from the highways to children getting knocked down and pedestrians getting knocked down.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anyway, yes. So that's...
After depressing everybody, let's move on to the next show. The joy of Pip tools and PyEnv virtual environments in the little bit of Python series by Clacky. And there were two comments, clarification from Clacky himself. Errata, Ubuntu Python virtual env works just fine. I confused myself when creating the Nix Python virtual environment, which doesn't work, when I thought I was creating an Ubuntu Python virtual environment, which actually does work.
Just absorbing that, sorry. Tutoto says, interesting and insightful. It's been a while since I needed to do Python package management, but thanks to this episode, I'm ready next time the need arises. Yeah, point.
I think it's kind of important if you ever plan to distribute your Python program.
Yeah. I am not good at thinking at that level, I'm afraid. So it's good to get an occasional kick in the backside. It's a good mindset to be working with.
Absolutely, yeah. And the next episode was Tony Hughes, the first in a miniseries on Matchbox and diecast restoration. And Tukatoruto says, sounds good. Look forward to this series. I haven't ever stripped Matchbox cars, but I've done my fair share of miniature stripping. I'm interested in hearing how you handle this, as these models are both metal and plastic parts.
Yes, it's really intriguing. Tony Hughes himself replies saying, feedback from Tutoto, thanks for the comments. I'll be covering how I go about dismantling the models, removing paint from the casting and plastic parts as part of the series. My next episode will be about the basic tools and materials you need to get started.
It's cool.
But yeah, I find it intriguing because these are toys from my era, and my era is before this, but I do remember them. And you look at them, some of these poor tatty old things, and think, oh, it'd be nice to bring it back to life again. And I'm really impressed that Tony's doing this.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. All the cars that he has remind me very much of the cars that I had, because they were all in this state when I got them, having had four brothers using them before me.
Yes. So, yeah. Yes. So kids tend to be a bit hard on these things.
So the following day was something that I had planned to do for months, or years actually, and was surprised that I had never gone around to it. And I heard that the Escape Pod series were in trouble financially because of their they're still trying to pay their authors, and during this period it's tough for them. So I had several ones that I wanted to put on the show, but I thought this one was the most appropriate for HPR.
Yes, it's a lovely, lovely episode. I've listened to Escape Pod for a while, but I missed this one. I never heard it. 2018. I had to rush back and listen to it straight away as I was posting the show, which is a bit naughty, probably.
Sorry. I went back and downloaded all the Escape Pod shows and listened to them from the start while I was doing a renovation at one point here in the house. They are absolutely excellent. And there was one other show that I wanted to put on, but I can't find it. But this one, actually, I ended up hearing it come into my feed. And then I was thinking, oh, I've already listened to this twice before, so I won't listen to it again. But, I had the face mask and stuff on. And then I ended up listening to it for yet a third time. I really, really thought they did a very good job on this artificial life form. It's basically about a artificial robot who gets into, is it anime, I think?
Yes, yeah, sort of fandom type of.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the name, isn't it? Fandom of Robots. Yeah.
That's the one.
I could really sympathize with that. And the author's written a magnificent one. Let's find out more from that particular source.
And the narration is absolutely excellent, top notch.
Yes, I've heard him many times. He has a really good delivery. Some excellent people on that.
Thing is, with Escape Pod, you can't always know if it's going to be a nice, uplifting episode. This one definitely is. So it's a nice episode to start off with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's a bit of a, you can come out of these things.
Yeah.
Going, oh, I wish I hadn't listened to that.
Just so. Exactly. Good. That's not to say the shows are not good. It's just, you're there in tears sometimes at some of the episodes. And you go, I am an internationally renowned wuss, so that's fine. I'm allowed to do that. Anywho, following on. Federated blogging with Write Freely, and this is part of Ahuka's social networking, social media thing. And Clacky says, Federated links for talks on Fediverse thing, in addition to the archive .org location above, the talks are also available on the Federated free social web at, and he gives a link.
That's cool. Yes.
Nice.
It was a distraction-free tool for writing, which is a pretty cool thing, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. They talking about WordPress and Microsoft Office and stuff. Or sorry, WordPerfect at the time that you just sat down and wrote, and then Microsoft Office came on and people productivity went down. I actually saw that from day one.
Yeah, we had WordPerfect somewhere or other on a machine in the department I was working at, but I never used it myself. We were all writing documentation by getting it punched on punch cards, you know, so you'd sit with a coding sheet and write stuff up and get it punched, and then there was a text processor which read the cards and produced stuff on a line printer or a daisy wheel or something like that. That's the state we were at, and I was doing that kind of thing.
So the following day was Keep Calm and Virion. Is that how
and
you pronounce it?
The text-to-speech thing made a right mess of my pun there. Very disappointed.
Sorry, I guess now.
You
are the one who wouldn't let me put puns on your Bash series. Thank you very much.
It's all right to put your own puns on. Oh, come on.
Exactly.
Andrew and I were debating what to call it. I made some suggestions, and this is the one that we both agreed was. I mean, it doesn't mean anything, but it just sounds good.
And after 225 shows, not counting all the community news ones, you still don't know how to use a USB recorder.
who could know that? If you've got a multiple ports on your laptop and there's several USBs, if you plug it into the first USB, it works great. If you plug it into the second USB, it doesn't. You get this incredibly shitty noise. But I mean, it was not as bad as the next time I tried to do this. But it's just, I don't know. This, I don't understand why this laptop would do that.
Oh, anyway. It's weird.
Yeah,
I do, of course, mess because the gods of audio recording can fall on any of us at any time.
Well, I'm back to my, just for anybody who's listening and might be vaguely interested, I'm back to using Mumble on my main desktop. And the way I managed to solve that one was by recompiling Mumble to make it work. Whereas before, the version I had was not playing ball at all. The gods of sound recording really, really hate me.
Well, this is a nice episode. It's great to. I ended up listening to this one twice because the first time I was making a bike shed or rearranging the bike shed, and I didn't know if I had got to the end. And then the second time I was down shopping and I thought, I'll just listen to it again because it was worth it.
Wow. That's punishment.
I like the pain of making tea.
Well, we had fun anyway. We enjoyed
it. That's good. I'm enjoying these ones.
Chin waggy type thing. We'll maybe do another one before or too long. I don't know. Depends.
And Dan Dixon was on the following day, and this one went viral in my work when I posted this. And about how to use a push-to-talk thing, and some people have adapted it to use it on the Mac as well. So there you go. I have actually found a Android Nano here. I don't know if you can hear me clicking that.
I can.
That is intended to be my push-to-talk, but I... got distracted. His code is good, but very, it's at a tutorial level as far as my Python is concerned. So I was thinking of modifying it, just the basic blink script sketch, because I'm not interested in the LED light and all that flashing. I just want off, on, off, on. So I've been kind of hacking at that yesterday, and then I had to stop because it was exercise time.
Well, yeah, I think it's a brilliant thing. It's really
absolutely awesome.
It's just to correct you, by the way, it's Dan Nixon. You got his name.
Oh, sorry, Dan. Angle.
But yeah, a brilliant piece of work, and the pictures were great too. It really adds a huge lot to these things.
Yep.
To see some pickies, and we got our act together, or I got my act together, and we managed to get the pictures properly interleaved with text and whatever, and with thumbnails and stuff. And this has prompted me to write some scripts behind this to do this in a less human intervention-y way, so I can't screw up anymore.
That's where scripting comes from, Dave.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it's all about protecting yourself from yourself, in my case, anyway.
Absolutely. No, but I really want to get this working. Because I'm sick and tired of having to find a key on my laptop, and I want to have one on my, basically on all the computers that, rather than a printed one, I was thinking of just getting one of those thin nanos, you know, about the width of a credit card and about a centimeter, half an inch wide, and then kind of shrink wrap them, or you know, put them in some clear heat sink tubing.
Mm-hmm.
And then use the onboard LED as the light to tell you whether it's on or off. So that's kind of what I'd like to do.
Yeah, excellent. Yes, yes. Heat shrink tubing is wonderful stuff. Different sizes.
Yeah, I got a little USB oscilloscope thing from Bitsco that uses that. So might work,
yeah,
but I haven't got the code working. I might get in touch with him and ask for his help.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at the code yet. I must go and have a look. It's a great little project, though. Really, really, really impressive.
Ken Fallon says, brilliant idea. I must try this. I'll probably use different parts. As you can tell, yes, I am. And I've got nowhere. Thank you. And you know why I've got nowhere? Because since this lockdown thing, I've become the house. From morning until night, I have to fix things. Just 24/7. I can't use Zoom. I can't use this. My laptop cable's fallen out. My charger's missing. My door knob has stopped working. It's just brutal. Oh.
That's not happening here. My kids are not around. Not much anyway. So, yes.
Anywho.
So, and we also had a comment from Jezra, who says, an amazing mix of custom hardware and software. Thank you for sharing. I've now fallen down a rabbit hole of links to software I didn't know I needed. Smiley face. This is very much up Jezra's street, I would think. So,
absolutely. Yeah,
cool stuff.
And the next one, health and healthcare. This is another one by Ahuka. And it is about the coronavirus to date. And Zen Floater gives a link to the Magical Forester Atheist Commons. Capitalism is successful as it models nature's kill or be killed ethics at a conscious level. In short, yes, you're going to get out there and you're going to die. The problem was in allowing China into this global community, not whether or not you're going to hide in your house. Okay. Don't know how we got that from that show, but...
I think Hooker was sort of making a few comments about how capitalism wasn't helping with this. Capitalism is driving the removal of lockdown. Did you say that?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that, so, yes. See that now, yeah.
Which is a common... analysis, and it's also being used as analysis in the UK, where we're leaving things far too early for political reasons. So I disagree with Zen Floater on every level, I think.
Okay. Well, he says you're going to go out there and you're going to die. So I don't know if he's pro or anti, actually. Capitalism is indeed a kill or be killed type ethic, although I don't think that that's necessarily... models in all of nature, because there are plenty of species who cooperate within the same species. Ants, elephants, lions. Where are we? What episode are we at?
3079.
Which is Porn and Trump, where the lads discuss Audacity, Keaton Live, Blender, PricewaterhouseCoopers, the current war, Better Things, and etc. etc. There are no comments on that show as yet. And the following day, we had a show by myself, Ansible Ping, Troubleshooting a Basic Ansible Install. I'm not an Ansible expert by any means, but I do like it as it's something that you can run on your laptop and just configure stuff in a standard way around your network. So what I wanted to do was give people basically the how-to on how to get something up and running so you're not to make troubleshooting a little easier.
Yeah, very, very helpful. I think it was an excellent journey through the basics, I found anyway. It all flew past me fairly quickly, but the point that when I start trying to do this, which I do intend to do, using a Raspberry Pi maybe, I'm sure this will start to become clearer and will be very helpful.
Yeah, the steps in the episode are there. You should take you about 15 minutes in total to go through that episode and, you know, install Ansible, and then you can uninstall it after you're finished if you don't like the concept.
No, it looks good. Yeah, it's definitely something I want to do.
Okay, the following day we had Tukatoruto, who was talking about testing and formal verification of software. And this is harking back to episode 3057, where he forgot to mention why somebody would want to do it. And there's lots of people in my work would swear by this methodology. So a good discussion.
Yeah, it sort of opened up windows to things that I wasn't completely clear about, aware of, I guess you could say. So I've seen people doing this sort of stuff, but in a sort of computer science context, I mean, and wondered why. Never had to do this myself, but then I'm not that sort of a programmer. I'm more of a sort of nuts and bolts and nail and plywood type programmer, probably. So, yeah, it's not a cheap operation. The message I took from it, but important in certain contexts. Presumably, if you're building stuff to run a ventilator for patients, or an aeroplane, or a car,
absolutely,
or whatever. So these are important things.
Well, you know, it just saves money in the long run. The earlier you can catch the stuff, the better.
Yeah.
So the next show was a discussion on RFC 5005 Part 1, Paged and Archive Feeds. Who cares? ? I care. I care very deeply. I equally love and hate this protocol.
Yeah. I do actually understand that point of view. You've worked with it more than I have, but the times I've messed around with both RSS and Atom, I've found them rather frustrating. And this extension seems to be a cool thing to have, but I don't know how well it's going to exist in the real world.
Now, and therein lies your problem. I have had reason to think that this was going to save my bacon in two locations, one being here on HPR, and the other being in work, where it would allow the offlining of a online database. And what where it fails, and it does fail, it fails in its vagueness, and it fails in the archive the fact that an archive can never be touched again means it's essentially useless, because we can't use it on HPR. We can't have one archive and then every day add another episode into this archive episode. So that would mean we would need to archive a month or archive or whatever. So then you have lots of different archives linked together, and it's just completely horrendous to deal with, and also vague in that how you interpret the specification, even with two or three different people on it, was different, and I had a different interpretation as well to what the specification says. So essentially it's unimplementable then. Great idea though. The first, last, and previous thing, they did mention on the HPR feed that we have two feeds, and we have two feeds specifically for this reason. One is that we maintain the two-week feed, and then there's the full archive feed of everything. That is a pain. That is, boss, yeah, what can you do? Because this doesn't fix that problem, unfortunately. So there you go. That's all I have to say about that.
I did start reading the RFC itself. I've always been quite fascinated by RFCs and stuff, but we've got lots of shoulds and musts and all that stuff in it. It's certainly readable, but
very,
yeah, the implementation, as you say, might well be a struggle, given that it's quite readable.
Well, and also what I found interesting in this was how Google, you know, Microsoft is known for its embrace, extend, extinguish dialogue. I think they made the valid point that anything that Google touches, you should be very wary of, because they will embrace, extend, and then abandon. And I think a lot of people are very sore about Google Reader. Since they dropped Google Reader, I think a lot of... there's a certain population of the tech population that have decided, okay, that's enough now, Google, thank you.
Yeah, it was...
And with it went the popularity of RSS, where you could... where you could use it as a feed mechanism. Yes, people will say that podcasting has never been more open, but the RSS feeds themselves may be used in the background in an ASM feed or XML, and I use them interchangeably here. But the majority of podcasting now would be more than happy to hide the feeds from people and give dedicated feeds to Apple, iTunes, or whichever, Stitcher or whatever these proprietary walled garden podcast listening applications are.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with Ty, the guy who organizes Edinburgh Linux User Group, yesterday about this, because he's part of a new podcast that he was advertising. It turned out that it's available on Spotify and no RSS was visible. I did quiz him about that, and
yeah.
You could find it if you dug deeply enough. Dave Lee was kind enough to dig and find it, but we were having a conversation about why this is so, and it is exactly as you say, that people are trying to make money from it, and just having it out there and available is not a way of doing that, it would seem.
Yep.
And it lets the plebs have too much freedom, you know, kind of that. Oh, sorry, did I say that out loud?
No, coming with our left-wing communist views here. So, anywho, mumbling anarchist, while on lockdown. Anarchy! Thank you. You're an anarchist! Oh, get off this network. Yourself and Mr. X had a chat, and we all had the pleasure of listening to it. And I also had the additional pleasure of watching this video that Dan Nixon added into the mix.
Oh yeah, I haven't done that yet. Actually, I haven't done that. I was asking. I just emailed Mr. X to say, did he know what thing he referred to actually was? I haven't heard back from him yet. He's a busy guy. I must look at that video.
Well, I'll read the comment. He says, groove-based TAFE format is
TEFIFON.
Thank you, TEFIFON. And there's a good review there on Techmon's YouTube channel.
Ah, yeah. He is excellent for talking about these types of things. Yeah. Oh, good. I listened to this yesterday, I think. So tend to be reluctant to listen to my own stuff. And this one I thought was going to be a total nightmare. It was a bad dream, but it wasn't a nightmare.
It was fine.
It was crap, but it was very small, like sort of rabbit droppings rather than a big steaming pile. Fine.
Well, I was listening to it on the bike yesterday, and it was absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Good. Now, the next day, the audiobook club is dusting out the cellars here, and it was Star Trek: The Continuing Mission. And the podcast for the next one is Tinsure, an apocalyptic proposition.
It's tincture. It's my grandmother always used that word. It's a valid word, and it means a suspension or dissolving of something or other in alcohol. So you have a tincture of this and a tincture of that. And she would think it's also a Victorian. She was a Victorian. And it was used as slang to mean I'm just about to have a little tincture, which was a little glass of
alcohol. Drum.
That's right. Yeah. So tincture is the word.
Ahuka says, and I agree. Missing 50. Hearing 50 makes me miss him again, and I must admit I was surprised to discover that I appeared in this episode. But good work for the reviews, folks.
Yeah, it's a great shame not listening to this. But it's good that we have these reminiscences. We didn't just sort of vanish off the face of the HPR world. It's nice to have these memories.
Yeah. And it is nice to know that they're on archive.org, and the best of 5150 is up there for anybody, new generations of people to listen to. And I'm sure whenever the first probe heads off for the new worlds, that a copy of archive.org will go with them, and other life forms will have the joy of listening to our musings here on the network.
Yes. Good luck.
Speaking of aliens, no, it's not that too. Architecture of Robustness by Ahuka, definitely not an alien. Although, if there were aliens on the planet, a retired project manager would probably be the most clever disguise of any of them. Just saying. And social networks, platforms, histories, and stuff. This is how do you secure networks against attack while still be opening to strangers. This was probably people haven't listened to this one, but this is a very good. Yeah, how do you strike that balance? Pretty much.
Yeah, quite a problem. And wow, there's some links here. I've only just started looking at these because I haven't had a lot of time, and. I hope it's great for the link, so thank you very much for that.
So, going back to the previous show's comments, Bash Tips 21 by Dave Morris, nobody also had a comment about that, saying, personally, I feel like the best and most complete resource for awk is the GWOC manual and links to said document, to which Dave felt that he had to reply.
I do. Well, nobody's comment was in response to something where I'd said to CRVS, I think, that we'd done a series on AWK, because he made a comment about AWK, and that was also available on opensource.com. I don't know if nobody thought that I was blowing my own trumpet in some sort of way and saying that we had a far better resource than the GWOC manual. So I was felt at pains to point out that wasn't the case. So what I said was, thank you for your feedback. If I interpret you correctly, I think you may have misunderstood the spirit of my earlier comment. I was replying to CRVAS when he mentioned the use of shebangs in the context of writing AWK scripts. I took him to mean that this particular episode had helped him provide an insight which assisted with this understanding. In my reply, I pointed to the series that B. Easy and I had done on AWK, where we tried to introduce people to this tool and made many, many references to the GORK manual along the way, of course. There's no contest with the GORK manual itself. That is what you're implying. The manual is obviously the most comprehensive and definitive resource on the utility and the language. The resource which BEASY and I had tried to provide was simply a way into concepts which may have been daunting and somewhat inaccessible to some. Our role is one of supplementing the manual itself, not of superseding in any way. I hope this clarifies any misunderstanding there may have been.
So the next comment was on Blood Witness and Mord Ansi says, I love this book. Can't wait to listen to this episode. David Hitt is amazing and has other stuff to listen to and gives a link to davidhitt.com/podcast. While I agree with most of his opinions and information, there have been a few things I absolutely disagree with him about, but I get to hear a different point of view from someone. And
yes, I don't know, did he drop his phone at that point? But anyway, yes.
So there's been Pens, Pencils, Paper and Ink, comment on that one, one of your episodes, by Archer72, saying, this episode leaves me wishing I were a writer and an artist. I am interested. It is an interesting medium that my daughter and artist may take up, since she has been sketching pen drawings lately. To which Bookworm... Actually, I'll do Bookworm and then you can do the year two own replies. How's that? Bookworm says, to the same episode, Dave, my apologies for the late comment. I had intended to get it in prior to the community news, but life happens. I too have always been fascinated by these tools. My fascination was multiplied by both of my parents working in parallel industries when I was younger. My father worked in an art and drafting supply house and my mother in an office supply store. Instead of turning to fountain pens, my disposition is towards ballpoint pens. While I do agree that they aren't the greatest writing tools, I have leaned toward advertising pieces and novelty pens. I have pens in my collection from as early as the 1950s and 60s. Mostly local business advertising, a few national chains and brand names. Art class in middle school introduced me to papers and textures and artisan papers. I am proud owner of 100% handmade journal, not my by me, I don't have the skill level. The 300 pages of paper is all handmade from recycled cardboard and denim, and the entire volume is bound in hand-tooled leather. It's so nice. I'm scared to write in it alone.
Well, thank you for doing that. While you were doing it, I seem to have fallen off the network and come back on again automatically, which is a... Can you hear me?
Can you press record, please? Because my recording is very dodgy.
Yep. Sorry, didn't
Ooh,
do that.
Oh, dear.
So, I don't know what happened. I was getting unable to resolve host name. With the DNS, my ISP's DNS gone funny. Anyway, continuing, shall I? Yeah, we're good?
Yeah, please. I'm trying to see actually if my recording's here, because it'd be very depressing, Dave. Very depressing.
So I said in reply to Archer72, hi, thanks for the comment. I know what you mean. I'm no artist myself. My daughter took art and science at school and has developed her art skills since then. She always tells me to keep sketching if I want to get better at it. That's what she's done to try and get to a place where she can start to combine her science interests with her art. I guess the message is that you can develop abilities if you keep trying.
And yep, replying, do the replying, next one as well.
Yep, replying to Bookworm, I said, thanks for the comment, it's much appreciated. My interest in fountain pens didn't really develop until I was beyond school age. School had the effect of making me dislike using them because I was forced to do so. I've been a frequent ballpoint pen user for my university student days because it was easier to write rapidly with one when in lectures or other places where rapid transcription was needed. I can see how an interest in the older 1950, 1960 designs of ballpoint pens would be a thing. Quite collectible. Your handmade journal sounds wonderful. Leather cover too. I've never owned anything so good, but I do have some notebooks that I like so much I've never used them and probably never will. Your reaction to your journal is perfectly understandable. I'd like to hear more about the pen collection in the journal if you feel you could make a show about them, smiley face.
Okay, and then we have the comments of this month's show. And there wasn't a lot on the mailing list.
Nope,
and there are no events pretty much because of the lockdowns.
On the any other business front, it was just me telling myself what a clever person I am for having sent in 9 updates to the tags and summaries. So there you go.
Cool, good news. Okay, so without further ado, I think we'll bring that to the end because my neighbors started sanding.
Oh, great. Nobody's cut the grass here yet.
Just in time. Okay. Thanks, everybody. And remember to tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.